Saving money on your next outdoor project at Menards. Easily transport mulch, stone, and other materials with the Masterforce heavy-duty steel wheelbarrow. Maneuver over any terrain with a 16-inch tire that never goes flat. Saving money on this and all other Masterforce tools exclusively at Menards. Visit us in-store and at Menards.com and see all the great deals going on now in our weekly flyer.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
But first, look, this story, you've heard about it talked on all of the programmes here today. The new report that's out into the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services that finds about 140 children were lost without any follow-up appointments planned, some of those on antipsychotic medication. The investigation also points to fairly serious concerns in finding enough adequately trained staff in the service as well to deal with young children. So we've heard lots today in terms of the analysis of this political reaction, but I just want to chat to you. I mean, people who have actually got first-hand experience of the CAM service. If it's something over the years, maybe you've previously experienced it with your own children, good or bad, whatever your experience. I just want to talk to people today, hear your thoughts. 1800 453 106, that's the number if you want to share your story with us. Anne is on the line because Anne, your son was referred to CAMS. Tell me about your experience.
Andrea, first of all, sorry for being a little emotional. This report has brought back up a lot of memories in our house. It was approximately 2 years ago.
Okay.
Our son was in a bad place, was self-harming. He would start off with probably a text on the bus to school to me saying he was having bad thoughts. He couldn't control them. And he would use whatever he could in school to harm, be it a scissors, a compass, and this became a regular pattern. There was a really bad episode 1 week where I got a text one morning saying, I can't stop it, I'm really going to do something bad today. I contacted his school. I have to say, the support in his school was fantastic. I rang his year head, who I explained, he was on the bus, he was about to get off the bus into school, and I was really worried. The school counsellor became involved immediately, and he was taken away from his classroom, and counsellor spoke with him. And they have a great peer support system in his school.
Yeah.
His counsellor spoke with me and said he needed to see his GP urgently. He was in a very bad place. We got an urgent appointment with our GP, who was very reluctant to go the medication route. And I'm glad to say now, I'm glad he was reluctant.
Okay.
So then came CAMS. He referred us to CAMS. Now, our referral came very, very quickly because he was seen as an urgent case. There was imminent danger with him. And this is where everything changed. We met the psychologist and a nurse and we spoke with them together, but then we were split. And my biggest regret to this day is I left my vulnerable boy on his own. I should have never let that happen. I spoke with the nurse in CAMHS, who was more or less my interpretation of what was being said. We needed to change as parents. We needed to become tough and tell him that this behaviour wasn't acceptable. This was our vulnerable child. The doctor that spoke with our son later that night at home, he said, I'm worse than ever because now somebody thinks my behaviour is silly and stupid. We questioned him and asked him how did he think that, and he said, well, the doctor told me that today. So this vulnerable boy is now being told a behaviour he can't control is silly. He was given an app to download on his phone and he looked through it and he said, I asked him how did he feel about the app and would he use it? And his line was, he said, well, one of the things is talk to your friends when the bad thoughts are there. He said, I don't want to talk to anybody. We were told that afternoon to remove knives, scissors, any sharp, ordinary kitchen items from our home for his safety, but there was no follow-up for him.
So after that appointment, Anne, there was nothing after that?
No, we were told there was no follow-up would be coming from CAMHS.
That
the app should help him.
The app?
The app should help him. That was it. I had experience and had volunteered with a national mental health organisation. And I knew, it was very personal to me. So I wasn't in a place to deal with him myself. We were lucky to make contact with Jigsaw. And he went the route of bio and energy and martial arts. His GP checked in on us, but CAMHS, never. But we walked out of there in a very lonely, dark place that day.
So your issue wasn't getting the appointment. As you say, Anne, the intervention was there and it was there early, but it was one appointment and there was no follow-up.
That was it. Andrew, can I just make one comment? I'm glad this report has come about. However, this report cannot become a talk shop and it can't be experts saying it will be actioned, we will do this. It needs to be, this is being done and this is being done now.
Is that, that's your fear, Anne?
That's my fear, yeah.
I know there's calls for even the minister in the area, the Minister for Mental Health, Mary Butler, to make a statement on this. Look, there'll be plenty of discussion and analysis about this for the next few days. But like it's in hearing your experience, Anne, that I think people will you know, learn from this, that they'll have an understanding about what the system is like. I'm sure there's many, many others, you know, that your story will resonate with them today. I've no doubt, and I can see even from the text coming in. How are things now, Anne? I mean, you mentioned your son worked through Jigsaw and had still follow up with his GP.
He had bioenergy therapy and martial arts has become his place.
Okay.
He's a healthy, mentally stable 16-year-old with fantastic coping skills now.
Yeah.
But it was done by his family and the assistance of friends. It wasn't CAMHS. We were in a very lonely, dark place that evening.
I'm sure even listening to this today, Anne, it's tough. It's tough for you and the family, you know, listening to all the discussion and the review and the findings and the whole lot coming out.
It is.
Yeah.
But maybe it's, you know, we're in a good place. What about the families who didn't get to those places? What about the families who didn't have the background I had as a volunteer with a mental health organisation?
I know you had at least some knowledge of the area and the sector and that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. What about all those families that didn't have that? But my one big regret is I left my boy, my vulnerable boy, be taken on his own that day.
And will you, thank you for sharing your story with us today. Because okay. I know it's not easy, and it's, you know, recalling the experience over the past 2 years, and I've no doubt, sure, I know from chatting to you there, it's very tough to do that. Will you stay on the line, Anne, if you don't mind? Because I just want to bring in another caller or two as well that have got in touch in listening to you here this afternoon. Niall is on the line as well. Niall, what's your experience of CAMHS?
How you doing, Andrea? To be honest, it was underwhelming. My son had brain surgery about 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, and was attending Temple Street because after he had depression and anxiety, and we discovered that he was autistic as well. So he was attending psychology and psychiatry in Temple Street. Coming up to his 16th birthday, they said they're going to have to refer him on. So they referred to CAMHS here in Navan, where we live, and they said they'll hold on to him until the referral is answered. So that was, they held on for as long as they could up to his 17th birthday, and then they said they had to discharge him from Temple Street. It wasn't until January 22 that we got the referral, more than a year after the referral was put in. We got in contact with CAMHS here in Navan, and they said he was on the list, but they don't know when they're going to get to him. So he was at severe anxiety and depression, and we said, look, we're at crisis, we need something. Mm. So they said, okay, they'll raise it with their team the following week. And it wasn't until around September 22 that he got his appointment. He saw the doctor once and then saw a nurse, an autism nurse, for about 7 or 8 sessions. After that, his 18th birthday came up in November and he was discharged from CAMHS. We were dealing with another specialist for my other son.
Okay.
And they noticed that he wasn't referred on to adult mental health services from CAMHS. This was a specialist from a different
And was this due to delays? Is that, Niall, just due to the number of people? Is that why there's a delay?
I don't know. I really don't know. I rang I got onto CAMHS and said, we need them referred to adult mental health services, and they said, well, your GP can do that. And we said, but you're the last psychology that he's seen, so would it not be better coming from you? So she reluctantly kind of says, oh, well, okay, I'll do it for you, but your GP could have done it. So we're waiting for that referral to come through.
Okay,
now,
so
as well.
See, your issue, Niall, really is around, it's been getting access to staff and to the services.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so you've a different experience to Anne, really. It's actually been able to avail of the services.
It is, yeah. I told you before, I run a youth club here in Navan for children with autism, and mental health issues go nearly kind of hand in hand with autism, with anxiety and things like that. And a lot of the parents that we have dealt with in the youth club have their children have been referred to CAMHS and have gotten nothing from them, or have been refused because they're on the autism spectrum, So, yeah, it's getting
okay.
The access.
So in your case, it's actually been able to access the services. Chloe, you're on the line as well. Like, what's your experience?
My experience is that we tried to access services with my son from, say, junior infants, and it took 2 years for us to access the services and be accepted onto any of the waiting lists because he kept getting passed from pillar to post because the CAMHS team suspected that my child was autistic, and then the disability team basically said, well, even if he is autistic, he's high functioning, so he wouldn't be a priority because he only has high functioning autism. He doesn't have a physical disability as well. So we had to wait and we had to involve TDs and everything just to be seen. And then what happened was we were finally accepted onto the list, and then as your previous person has said, because he had autism, or they suspected autism, he saw one doctor and was pretty much discharged because they were like, we don't deal with autism in CAMHS. We had to keep fighting then because we still had issues with the behaviours. My child has a lot of challenging behaviours. And he was actually facing being expelled from school in junior infants. So he had a lot of issues that we needed help with. When we did finally get back onto it, we saw another consultant in CAMHS. And he basically said to us, well, looking at the files and seeing him in front of me here, it's obvious to me that your child has autism and ADHD. And I don't know why the other consultant didn't say that. And he should be given this medication. And he was immediately put on to medications, which we've now discovered he should have never been on. He was put on antipsychotics at 7 years of age and was on them for 2 years straight without any follow-up, without any physical appointments, without anything to kind of make sure that he was doing okay. And what we didn't know that until January 2021, when a new consultant came in and advised us of the issues. So like my child has lost 2 years of his life because he was wrongly medicated for 2 years with no follow-up.
And just one of the things I noted today, and it's been well talked about as well in other programmes, one of the findings from this interim report is that children and young adults who should have had follow-up appointments with CAMHS for things like the review of prescriptions or monitoring of medication didn't have those appointments for up to 2 years. So that's actually your experience, Chloe.
It is the only reason. So we hadn't seen someone for over a year, and naively we thought that that was because of the pandemic and that our son was doing okay. He wasn't in school, so we weren't having such crisis issues. We weren't necessarily chasing appointments because we thought everything was going okay.
Yeah.
Then he started getting more and more aggressive. And again, naively, I thought it was because he needed more medication because he'd obviously grown in that time period. And I thought he needed his medication reviewed. So I contacted CAMHS. And what I actually found out was that he had been discharged in 2018, unbeknown to us. He'd still been receiving medication every since.
So he was discharged from the CAMHS service and still still taking the prescribed medication because there had been no review of that for 2 years.
Yep. Still receiving the medication, and his file had been archived. When I did finally get an appointment, so I contacted them in January 2021. I got an appointment in March 2021, found out all of the issues surrounding my child, but they couldn't find his file because his file had been put in the discharged folder and archived. So they actually couldn't even confirm that it was myself and my son who was there without having another member of staff come in and confirm who we were from a time we had been in before.
How did you feel, Chloe, when you heard you'd been discharged and your son is still, you know, taking the medication as was prescribed?
I came out of that appointment because I expected it just to be a normal appointment. It's normally only about 5 minutes. I was very, very distressed, very, very angry. And then since then, obviously, I've read up, have more knowledge on it and realised that you should never have been on this medication in the first place. Even if you are prescribed it, it's supposed to be for 6 weeks and then you get a break. He was on it for 2 years continuously. Just so many issues. And all the medication has been reviewed and he's been taken off most of the medication. But he's a completely different child now, so he's lost 2 years of his life because, you know, he's essentially sedated for 2 years.
And now, since he's come off the medication that he'd been prescribed, you see a serious difference in him?
I see it. It's like night and day. Before, he wouldn't want to participate with his friends. He wouldn't want to go out to activities or anything. And when we asked the doctor about this, we were basically told that because they were treating the ADHD, that the autism symptoms would then be more prevalent, and they have social communication skills, so he's masking and behaving in school all day, so that's why he's tired in the afternoon. So there was reasonable explanations given to us. Like, I would consider myself a well-educated person who doesn't just follow everything without checking into it, and I felt like I'd asked all the questions that needed to be asked, and I questioned medication. But I don't have knowledge of medication.
Of course, I'm not a medical practitioner.
So if I'm told this is the best course of action, and a reasonable explanation to any of the questions I had. But now I'm like so distraught with the fact that my child lost 2 years because I fought to get him into a service that harmed him. And I fought to do that. You know, I really fought hard to get him in there and they harmed him.
Well, just with the, yeah, with the fact, as you said, there was no follow-up appointment for the review of the prescription. Do you feel, Chloe, just in talking to you today and Niall and Anne there as well, do you feel lost in the system?
I feel like the system just doesn't work. There shouldn't be people lost. And looking at the report today, and they're saying 140 children lost in one area alone, but staff stopped reporting it because nothing was happening with the reports. So how can they give a figure of 140? Like, that actually angered me so much when I read that today, that it's quite dismissive. That I get they might have been hitting their head off a brick wall, but for every issue that they would have brought up, they could have potentially helped a child that was behind that issue. And they just stopped because they weren't being listened to by management.
I know this interim review is what we're talking about today and there'll be further details on that on it, but it's difficult, Chloe, to, you know, even to, I don't even really know what to say to you today, other than I wanted to hear from people to get the, you know, it's one thing to sit and read through a report and you can read loads of findings and stories and recommendations, but it's only in talking to you, mm-hmm. and Niall and Anne, that you actually hear firsthand the experience that this has had on you and your families.
And I think that's part of the problem, is that the whole country can be shocked and the whole country can be upset about these, but it's not their children that are behind these figures. Mm. And it's like the HSE can just basically go, well, this is the report, these are the figures, but they don't know the faces behind them and they don't know the people behind them. And it's destroyed lives.
I have a text in here from a listener who says, I'm a social worker with over 20 years experience. I refer children to CAMHS regularly due to protocol. Out of 20 years experience, I cannot think of more than 3 children that I can honestly say benefited from CAMHS. It's no exaggeration. When I have to refer now, I sigh, knowing that they're not going to get the support they need. They're typically just screened out after 1 or 2 visits. Heartbreaking and so frustrating as a professional working in this area to deal with this on a weekly basis. And that's just from somebody who says they're working in the area. Chloe, thank you for joining us today, for sharing your experience. Niall as well, who was with you, Anne also there too. Thank you for your time on the programme.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Avant Money.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.
Save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust 5-in-1 Spray Paint lets you choose from 5 unique spray patterns with a twist of the dial. Use it on a wide range of wood or metal projects for long-lasting results. Choose from over 50 color options available now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
We're talking about this report into child and adolescent mental health services, and it paints a fairly worrying picture of the services in this country. They highlight things like staffing, record keeping, 140 children in one CAMHS area alone been effectively lost, with no follow-up on their treatment. Also describes a postcode lottery with treatment better in some parts of the country than others, and lots of politicians out today all saying totally unacceptable. And we heard from Niall and Anne and Chloe there in the show in the past few moments, and their stories echo the findings that I've just mentioned in this report. Elva's got in touch with us too. Elva, you've also used the CAMHS system.
Yes, I have indeed.
Yeah. So what's your story?
Two of my 3 children have been referred to the local service in Cork, and both would have experienced needing to send multiple referrals before they were accepted. You know, meaning we go back to the GP again, or they are both autistic, so their CDNT would re-refer them. And, you know, for my older boy, I just gave up. I pursued a private route and we stuck with that for him. My younger boy was 6 when we referred him. He waited 18 months on their wait list. During that time, he continued to have, you know, a very difficult day-to-day life. School was very hard for him, social relationships, attending any of the activities that we'd offer just wasn't possible. And what he needed was an ADHD assessment. So we had to take him privately. We live in Cork. We brought him to Dublin. We couldn't find anybody privately either in Munster. So luckily for us, we were seen at a private clinic in Dublin. We had an excellent experience. That doctor, you know, listened to me and believed me, which was a nice change from other experiences I've had. He went through a range of treatment options with us. And luckily for us, we were able to choose a medication that worked and, you know, has really changed the quality of life for Celine. So his appointment with CAMHS came up then after 18 months and I brought him to that appointment. And I guess they were a bit flummoxed. They didn't seem to have a procedure to deal with a child who has been assessed privately while waiting on a public waiting list. That in itself is problematic. 18 months is a very long time in the child's life, you know, when he's 6, to, he's 8 now. You know, I don't think I could have done nothing for that period of time. But because he was diagnosed privately and because he was on a medication that was working, they wouldn't accept either of those things. They didn't find any fault with the report that was given or the diagnostic.
They just clinician. Have their own system, I suppose, in the way that they do it, is it?
Well, it's unclear to me. I've asked for a procedure because I have friends in other parts of the country who have gone a similar route to me, got private assessments, and they have been accepted by their local CAM. So, you know, that is obvious to me from the report. I read it all this morning. That is par for the course, a complete variance in experience depending on a postcode lottery, as we say.
And that's
the reality.
That's one of the main findings, I suppose, from this today, Alva, isn't it? That it nearly depends what part of the country you're in.
It does, and it depends on what you're presenting with. I guess I found that report pretty validating to read.
Did you?
Because, many of those observations were ones I've made, ones I've discussed with other parents and with clinicians, both at CAMHS and with our CD&T, because our children are autistic, so they're seen by, or at least they're on a list, to be seen by their CD&T. And that was one of the points that came out. I quote, there are poor relationships between primary care and specialist services like the CD&Ts, and it's not good enough. Children with mental health difficulties usually are complex, certainly autistic children who have a comorbidity of ADHD and or other things like eating disorders like ARFID need these interdisciplinary teams to be able to work together. And the report clearly states that's not the case.
Okay.
It says there are profound variations in staffing levels and that the lack of a digital infrastructure was leading to inefficiency on a large scale. We can all see that as
so this
people
all resonates with you. And there's something wrong with the fact, Alva, isn't there, that like, you know, you nearly take some, I don't want to say comfort, but I suppose some comfort from reading this today, you know, that the findings are, they're not just your experience, but they're actually, they're the experiences of so many others as well and other parents. And we've heard from that in other callers that we've spoke to here on the programme. Alva, let me bring in Dr. Kieran Moore as well, because Kieran, you've previously worked in the CAM system. You've left it. I mean, in reading this report today, is that your experience?
There are huge difficulties. I do think it's just important, first of all, to say, like, I'm just listening to stories there, and there are stories that for children and parents right across the country. And it's why we do this work, but it's horrible to hear the difficulties people are having. Difficulty sounds too small a word, but. You know, and that's really what matters in the end. But I suppose it's also important to say as well that there are good people within CAMHS who are really working hard and doing their best. And that's not to be an apologist. It's just the truth. So it's important to say that, and people do get good care. But it's not good enough. That's the problem. And I suppose also important to say. Sorry, go on.
No, but it seems to be dependent on what part of the country you're living in. almost to a certain extent?
Well, there is very much a resource issue. I worked in a particular part of the country where resources were very poor, but it is right across the country. But I suppose it's also just important to say that CAMHS doesn't exist in a vacuum, that there are primary care services like psychology and CDNT, which is a disability service. And I suppose the concern I would have is that what happens is that each service gets a referral on the patient and then says, okay, based on what they see, it's not appropriate for this service, it should be somebody else. And the difficulty is that a patient isn't seen even before that determination is made. And I suppose it's just quickly to give an analogy, everybody knows about asthma. If you have asthma and you're having difficulties breathing, there is a care pathway that's very clear. You go to your GP, the GP doesn't say, oh, I can't see based on a letter, I can't see you, I'll see you in 5 years' time, or somebody else would be better to see you. No matter how busy the GP is, the GP will see you based on clinical need. And then if it's worse, they'll send you to a hospital consultant, and if it's worse, you're admitted, and if it's worse, it's ICU, which hope to God doesn't happen for most people. But there's a clear pathway up and down. Okay. But if you have a different type of illness, which is a mental or psychiatric illness, that is not what happens. So depending on if you present with an acute illness or acute risk, you are not necessarily guaranteed to be seen, because an awful lot of services say, no, that's not appropriate for us. And then it goes to CAMHS, and then they get overwhelmed as well.
Well, one of the things that has really, I think, struck people today, Kieran, in listening to some of our callers, and in particular there to Chloe and Anne, was you know, children being prescribed certain types of medication and effectively no monitoring of that, or no follow-up appointment for the guts of 2 years.
Again, I can't comment on particular cases.
No, I know, but just...
You're absolutely correct. No, I mean, any medication of any sort that doctors prescribe, and we're medical doctors, it's our job to be able to know what we're prescribing and to monitor them. And again, that's our job, but it's also important that the resources are there. And for example, in one of the CAMHS places I worked in, and it's pretty much common throughout the country, if you ask for a stethoscope, they won't know what you're talking about. If you ask the system for taking blood, they say, oh no, we don't do that, send them back to your GP. So hapless GPs end up doing bloods, and sometimes there are problems with referrals over and back. You know, from my point of view, if you prescribe a medication, then you need to follow up on it, and you need to have the resources to be able to do that. So to examine a patient and to take bloods, because these bits are medical services.
Just finally, Kieran, I know the Inspector of Mental Health Services says, you know, that this particular report that's been published, I know it's somewhat earlier than planned, but it kind of highlights the need for pressing change. Is the CAMHS system working, in your opinion?
I don't think it's fit for purpose. And that's might sound like a very controversial thing to say, but I really don't think it is. I think there's good work being done, but it's just not working properly. And I think we need to go back to the drawing board, in the sense that treat it like, I'm using asthma as an analogy, that there is a clear pathway and the patients are seen based on clinical need, and that resources go in. And crucially, and I'll end on this, is that those who are managing the service actually have an expertise in what they're managing. So that if you're a manager and you don't know what child mental health or child psychiatry is, you go and find out. And that there are also consequences if you don't do your job, and that there is a management council set up along the lines of every other professional, so that there's a fitness to practice if you don't do your job.
Yeah. No, look, Kieran, listen, I appreciate your time on the programme today and for sharing your experience with us and your thoughts on the publication, this interim report this afternoon. Dr. Kieran Moore, also Elva as well, who's a parent, thank you for getting in touch with us.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Avant Money.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.